This is Michel Chossudovsky with the Global Research News Hour. This is our second hour coming to you from Montreal. This is an initiative of the Center for Research on Globalization. In the first part of the program, we were discussing various issues. Congressman Dennis Kucinich was at the last minute was not able to join our program. Michael Carmichael, who is a close collaborator, discussed with us various aspects of U.S. domestic policy, the introduction of the FISA legislation. In the second hour of this program, we are much honored to welcome Stephen Frost, who joins us from Great Britain, from the United Kingdom. And Stephen Frost is a renowned and distinguished physician who has investigated in great depth the mysterious circumstances surrounding the July 2003 death of Dr. David Kelly, it's almost day to day. It was on the 17th of July, 2003, Dr. David Kelly, who was a prominent UK government weapons expert, who knew the inside story on the weapons of mass destruction, well, he was found dead in the woods, and immediately what happened was that the British government of Tony Blair at the time reported that this was a suicide, and the cause of death was questioned by quite a number of people, but Dr. Stephen Frost, together with Dr. David Halpin and Dr. Seal Sennett, actually succeeded in breaking the media silence on the possibility that Dr. David Kelly did not commit suicide, as suggested by the official report. And again, this raises quite a number of other aspects which we'll be discussing with Dr. Stephen Frost in the course of the next hour. So bear with us. Welcome, Stephen. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you very much.
Well, welcome to the program. This is an informal chat. It's not quite the British formality. In the United States, we have these chat shows and people talk and so on and so forth. So again, I think what's very important is perhaps to recount briefly the circumstances of what happened 5 years ago with regards to Stephen. I'm sorry, with regard to David Kelly, not with regard to Stephen Frost, with regard to David Kelly, the weapons inspector, but both of you are doctors.
Yes, of course, he wasn't a medical doctor, though.
Yes, that's correct.
But he was a distinguished, he was the chief scientific advisor to the British government on biological weapons of mass destruction, and he had a considerable knowledge of chemical weapons of mass destruction as well. He was the preeminent expert in the United Kingdom, and some have said in the whole world. He had been honored by the UK government. He had been awarded the CMG, which is a very, very high honor, rarely awarded, and he was indeed, at the time of his death, being considered for a knighthood. If I lose you, Michel, as is possible, and even I may lose myself, because this is rather a complicated story, could you pull me up and...
Yes, certainly. Yes, we'll have to go to commercial break, actually. So this is perhaps a good time for the transition. We're talking to Stephen Frost, who has investigated the circumstances of scientists and weapons inspector David Kelly 5 years ago, dead in the woods. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour, which comes to you from Montreal, Canada. This is an initiative of the Center for Research on Globalization. Our website is www.globalresearch.ca. Our guest in the second hour of the program is Dr. Stephen Frost, who has investigated over several years the circumstances of the death of Dr. David Kelly, distinguished weapons specialist, who died mysteriously in the woods 2 days after he gave evidence before the Foreign Affairs Committee of the British House of Commons regarding rather controversial Iraq weapons of mass destruction dossier. Welcome back, Stephen.
Yes, hello, yes. Yes, you wanted me to give some kind of idea to the listeners about how things went, because 5 years have passed and it's difficult to remember all the details. But if I just say that there were two dossiers to start with, one dated September 2002, another dated, I think, January 2003. The dodgy dossier, in inverted commas, was in fact the January 2003 one, the later one of the two. Most people think it's the other way around, and that was the one that was lifted off the internet. So it's known that that was not only fixed up intelligence, but it was concocted. Concocted.
And that was that was the one that Colin Powell used at in his presentation to the United Nations Security Council. Is that not correct?
Are you sure that wasn't the September 2002?
It was the concocted one, the second one, I believe.
I think the second one was produced in January 2003 to kind of add weight to the first, and they lifted it from a PhD thesis on the internet, and they subsequently recognized that and apologized for it. But and that was kind of, the press didn't make much comments about that, which I thought was very odd. But the substantive dossier was the September 2002 dossier, and that was what all the argument was about when Andrew Gilligan, the BBC journalist, gave evidence that the FAC and he gave an interview to the Today program at 6:07 in the morning, I think, on the 29th of May, 2003. So we're talking about 6 weeks actually before Kelly was actually outed as the source of that.
Yeah, and that was really what sort of initiated the whole process. It was these allegations by Andrew Gilligan on BBC Today's program that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, and they could actually be used within 45 minutes, et cetera, et cetera.
Correct.
That was what caused embarrassment.
That came in very late, and also all the time it was known by those in the know, such as Dr. Jones, who actually said to the Hutton Inquiry, he was that actually they were battlefield weapons. These Tony Blair professed not to know anything about them being battlefield until, I think I'm right in saying, 2 years later. People have doubted that.
Is it correct that at the meetings on July 15th at the Foreign Affairs Committee that Dr. Kelly actually stated that in fact this whole thing was fabricated, that Iraq did not have weapons of mass destruction? Or do we know what he said to the Foreign Affairs Committee?
Well, the allegation from Gilligan was that the intelligence had been sexed up by the British government. And, of course, the Joint Intelligence Committee, which is the JIC, which is entirely separate from MI6 and MI5, they were responsible for producing the dossier, allegedly. And indeed, the head of the JIC, the Joint Intelligence Committee, John Scarlett, he claimed ownership, in inverted commas. But it is well known that he had many contacts with Alistair Campbell. And Alistair Campbell, we're talking, you see, the trouble is it's going backwards and forwards. So these conversations were taking place before the publication of the dossier in 2002, which eventually took Britain to war. Do you understand me?
So the conversations, right, absolutely.
The conversations between Alistair Campbell and John Scarlett and others were going on before the production of the 2002 September dossier. The 45-minute claim came in late, and it was not made clear that these... And it was presented as a clear and immediate threat. I quote, I think I'm writing, that's the correct quote, it's difficult to remember everything, but a clear and immediate threat to the United Kingdom. The importance of that is that to avoid going to illegal war, the United Kingdom, which is signed up to the Geneva Conventions and, in fact, ratified those, whereas I don't think the US did ratify them in 77 when they were changed. I'm not absolutely sure about that. The importance is that to avoid illegal war, Britain had to demonstrate self-defense. Are you with me?
Well, absolutely. Well, it's the same. It's the same kind of rhetoric in the United States.
So the same time as France said, we are not going to, we're going to veto at the United Nations, and Russia followed them, and nobody knew what China would do, but actually only needed one veto anyway at the Security Council. The Blair government, or Blair, one could say, decided that we're going to have, because it had been decided, if you remember, for, according to the Downing Street memos, that war would be waged on Iraq by Bush and Blair. Are you there?
But then to get back to the mysterious death of David Kelly.
Yes.
Because this is really what we're talking about. Is that there was a pretext to go to war. Presumably David Kelly had knew certain things which he knew a lot more than what he's supposed to know, and
yes.
He was maybe prepared to reveal this to the public, because otherwise, I mean, I think if it the why is it that the government immediately said it was suicide when there was no actual evidence of suicide?
Very good question. You're not allowed to assume suicide. Every doctor and lawyer, well, certainly doctors, are taught, they are taught at medical school in the United Kingdom that you cannot assume suicide. Indeed, in the United Kingdom, you must prove it, usually at an inquest. You must prove it beyond reasonable doubt. Now, Lord Hutton's inquiry, in which Lord Falconer, the Lord Chancellor, no less, he invoked Section 17A of the 1988 Coroner's Act to order the coroner to, quote, adjourn indefinitely, unquote, his inquest. Now, we learned at medical school that no one orders the coroner to do anything. Coroner comes from Queen, I think. I'm not quite sure which language. And we learned that the coroner is appointed by the Queen and is answerable only to the Queen and has statutory powers. Those statutory powers are that he can subpoena witnesses, British citizens, and they must appear before him. He hears evidence under oath. He can aggressively cross-examine witnesses, and he can call a full jury if he wishes. Having said that, it's not a criminal proceeding. It's inquisitorial. It's to find out the truth. So the main use of a, Yes. Yeah. So the main duties of a coroner are to establish, obviously, the identity of the body, the place of death, the time of death, and the cause of death, obviously.
Well, but if one looks at the cause of death, there's essentially three causes of death, are there not? One is natural
one
death.
Main cause, on a British death certificate, you have the primary cause of death in the case of David Kelly, which incidentally was produced on the 18th of July 2003 and registered. It was a full death certificate, and that was only 4 days after the coroner had been ordered to adjourn his inquest. And it is thought that there was some communication between the coroner and Faulkner between those two times. And also, Nicholas Hunt, the forensic pathologist who was relatively inexperienced, who performed the post-mortem in the middle of the night on 18th of July 2003, yes, I've lost my thread. Sorry, what was I saying?
Yeah, no, but I mean, I think the issue is the following: if the cause of death is not well, one assumes that one establishes the cause of death. If it's not suicide, there was no evidence of suicide. It wasn't natural death. Well, the only other alternative is that he was killed.
Correct.
That he was killed either murder or political assassination. I think we can use that. I will certainly refer to political assassination because that is something which is on everybody's lips in the United Kingdom, but nobody dares to talk about it.
Correct.
We'll have to go again to a short commercial break. We'll be back with our guest, Stephen Frost, renowned physician and analyst of the David Kelly Dead in the Woods affair of July 2003.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour. This is Michelle Chosudovsky. This program is an initiative of the Center for Research on Globalization. Our website is www.globalresearch.ca. Our guest on the second hour of this program is Dr. Stephen Frost, who has spent several years investigating the circumstances of the death of British scientist and weapons specialist David Kelly, who was found dead in the woods several kilometers from his home on the 17th of July, 2003, two 18th, days after...
Pardon? 18th, Michelle.
Oh, it was 18th, sorry
about
that.
The morning of the 18th, yes.
On the morning, he was found on the morning of the 18th. He most probably died the day before that, or was it?
Well, he went out for his walk allegedly on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But I don't understand how an important figure at such an important time, because as you remember, at the FAC, he was accompanied by two MOD minders sitting behind him. How on earth he managed to walk out of his home without any surveillance, and if you remember also, during his evidence at the FAC on the 15th of July 2003, he said that he did not have access to his own home because one of the MPs was demanding that he produce a list of journalists he'd met, and he said, I can't. He wanted it the next day. He said, I can't because I do not have access to my own home because I'm being pursued by the press. So not only did he have to get past the press to go for the famous walk, but he had to get past his own, the people who were presumably watching him.
Well, that's it. But then they said that where he died, or where he was found dead, was about 5 miles from his home. Is that correct?
Correct. As far as
that's a rather long walk, is it not?
It's a rather long walk if you are intending to commit suicide as well, yes. But it's also very odd that a man of this type, who was an expert, if you like, in the biology of death, should choose such a, if you like, feminine way to commit suicide, and indeed it's rarely successful. We've looked into the epidemiology of cutting wrists, and rarely does it succeed. It used to succeed in Roman times by climbing into a hot bath and cutting all four wrist arteries, but Kelly only cuts the left ulnar artery, which is not the one where a doctor would normally feel the pulse. So in other words, if you were cutting your own left wrist and you were right-handed, then you would cut the radial artery, which is the thumb side of the inside of the wrist, if you like.
And
Kelly was alleged to have cut the other one, which would be consistent with someone approaching him from the left, could be consistent with someone approaching him from the left and cutting across. Do you understand me?
Yes, of course, but then Kelly also...
So he would then get the little finger side of the inside of the forearm, and that would account for the ulnar artery. But the ulnar artery is actually deep to the volar carpal ligament, and not so easy to cut. And, of course, Kelly was alleged to have cut his ulnar artery with a concave-shaped pruning knife, which was apparently blunt as well, which he'd had since boyhood. And, of course, there were three blister packs of coproximol next to him containing dextromethorphine and paracetamol. And there was one of those tablets in the three packs. So, in other words, and it was immediately assumed that he'd taken the other 29. But it was not evidence.
Was there a police investigation?
Well, that's another good question, because we haven't been able to... the police were asked at the Hutton inquiry whether a murder inquiry was instigated, and the answer was something on the lines of, no, not exactly a murder inquiry, but of that standard. Well, the first thing you must do is exclude foul play. And then you can wonder about suicide. There was no note. There's always a possibility if he did commit suicide, of course, that he did write the note, but someone didn't like what he'd written, so it didn't survive. But there was no note, and we were taught at medical school that in the absence of a note, it is notoriously difficult to prove suicide. Because not only do you have to prove... Well, part of proving suicide is proving intent to take your own life. So if you accidentally kill yourself...
Yes.
On the way to commit suicide, for example, and you've left a note at the house... Yes, it just doesn't mean... It's not... There has to be intent to commit suicide.
I understand perfectly well. Then the question is...
you have to prove it as well at the point.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, Lord Hutton couldn't do that because he didn't have the statutory power, the very important statutory power, to hear evidence under oath.
So we'll have to go, Stephen, we'll have to go to another commercial break. We'll be back after the break with our guest, Dr. Stephen Frost, who is investigating the circumstances of David Kelly's death. Back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour. This is Michel Chosudovsky. This is an initiative of the Center for Research on Globalization, which comes to you from Montreal. Our website is www.globalresearch.ca. Our guest on the second hour of the program is Dr. Stephen Frost, who has investigated the circumstances of the death of David Kelly, the renowned British scientist who was cognizant of the Iraqi weapons of mass destruction dossier. One suspects that Dr. David Kelly did not commit suicide, and that his death might have been a political assassination, although we have no definite proof to that effect. Is that correct?
Well, as a professional, of course, I have to say that the Hutton inquiry looks to me as if it is a cover-up, and then the next question is a cover-up of what? And it's for other people to draw their conclusions, really. But there are, I know what one or two people have suggested. But the stakes, if it's enough to say that the stakes were extremely high. Some people say that there was no motive for naming Dr. Kelly because he'd already rattled the cage. But actually, I think that there wasn't a huge motive for killing him. And indeed, Blair was warned. It was not so much what he had said. It was more what he could say.
And that had to do with the alleged sexed up intelligence report on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, where the intelligence was meant to fit the policy, that of providing a justification for bombing and invading Iraq alongside with the United States of America.
Correct. And the importance, what I think is really important myself on the political side, is that it seemed to me that the American public, Tony Blair, was incredibly popular he was very popular in the United States, and it looked to me that like he was used to legitimize, if you like, America's war on Iraq, and in turn Kelly was used by the American government through Mike Pedersen, his interpreter, who allegedly was feeding him false intelligence from the Americans to influence the British government through David Kelly. Other suggestions have been that, and I think this is possible, because if you remember, at the time that this all blew up, the Kelly thing blew up, there were no WMD had been found, and the war was going wrong. There was looting, there was disorder. It was going all horribly wrong. And I think that Alistair Campbell hijacked the FAC because that was all about finding out, investigating Britain's reasons for going to war by concocting an argument with the British government about Gilligan's allegedly single source report. Now, that's interesting because actually the 45-minute claim was also single-sourced, and it turned out that Gilligan had at least four sources that we know of, and Kelly was one of them. So Kelly was outed on July the 9th. This is a very important timeline. May the 29th, 2003, the Today program, Gilligan's report. It now seems that Gilligan was right in everything he said, or just about. July the 9th, Kelly was outed by a very strange method. Blair said he had nothing to do with the outing of Kelly initially. He was actually on his way round the world at the time, and he said that he had absolutely nothing to do with the outing of Kelly. It turned out that the Hutton inquiry that he chaired meetings to discuss that very topic, whether what to do about Kelly, and indeed later on the Newsnight interview, which is a very late evening program on television, BBC Two, which is one of the better channels, he admitted that to Jeremy Paxman that the government had no choice but to oust him. And they did it by giving clues. They didn't oust him and say Kelly was the main source of the Gilligan story. They outed him by giving clues and allowing reporters to guess as many times as they liked, and then they promised that they would say yes if they guessed correctly. So I think it was a Financial Times reporter who... So that's a very strange way to oust someone. Now, the next thing was that on July the 14th, if you remember, Plame was outed, Valerie Plame, that's Wilson's wife. Wilson was the chap who went to Niger to investigate the Niger uranium claims, and he came back and said that there was no substance to that. And so Plame was outed on July the 14th, so that's 5 days after Kelly is outed. July the 15th, Kelly appears before the FAC. July the 16th, Kelly appears before the ISC, that's the Intelligence and Security Committee, I think, and seemed perfectly reasonable when giving evidence. And July the 17th, he went for his alleged walk. On July the 22nd, 2003, Plame's entire network, the Brewster Jennings network, was destroyed, thereby wiping out America's possibility to, how shall I say, look for biological stroke chemical weapons of mass destruction. And so some people have suggested, and I think this is very important to bear in mind, because it is a possibility. If you remember, they were absolutely certain that they were going to find WMD in Iraq, and then all of a sudden they weren't certain. They were absolutely certain they weren't going to find them. And I thought, how in a country the size of France could they be so certain both ways, if you see what I mean? So the question is, some people have suggested that maybe Kelly or maybe someone else discovered or thwarted a plan to plant weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
And that is a much more serious offense, I presume, than simply saying, well, we think they're weapons of mass destruction, we're sexing up the report, blah, blah, blah.
Well, much more
that's
serious
something offense. Everybody knows now. But the planting of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq
would be terrible.
But that plan was not implemented, because otherwise we most probably would have found those weapons of mass destruction.
Yes, so, exactly. But the question is whether Kelly and Plame, you know, somehow or other, someone somewhere thwarted their plans, and because if you remember, there was a huge... I couldn't understand what all the fuss was about and what all the panic was about. For example, if you look at the evidence of Blair to Hutton, he is saying, he says that they didn't know what to do about Kelly. And you just wonder, so was it a warning to others to keep their mouths shut, because they did after that, or was it punishment? Don't know.
Yeah. But now, how? I mean,
Norman Baker, in his book, of course, you know, The Strange Death of David Kelly, which I recommend your listeners read. It's very good indeed. But obviously, there are things missed out. There would be things missed out of any book on this subject. But he says that he gives all the evidence, and it all points to MI6, CIA, stroke, Mossad. And then at the end, he seems to cop out, and I don't blame him in a way, because he says that he's an MP in England, this chap, a Liberal Democrat MP. He spent 18 months looking into this, and we helped him. When I say we, there were several doctors and lawyers, and he concluded that anti-Saddam Iraqis had killed Kelly. But the evidence in his book points to other perpetrators.
Yeah. So because I recall we published an article by him, which was called "Did Two Hired Assassins Snatch Weapons Inspector David Kelly?" But what you're saying, in effect, that it may have been somebody else.
I'm saying that Norman Baker's book points to, it's very difficult, but it appears to point to MI6, CIA, Mossad, I don't know. It's very difficult. But then he cops out, and because it's very well documented, and then you think, and then he draws this very strange conclusion at the end and seems to cop out. I suppose he likes living.
Well, he's a member of parliament, so that in fact he's providing all the evidence which points to political assassination, and then he doesn't want to go the full length.
Correct.
But I think the other important issue is the role of the British media and also the US media in the cover up.
I agree.
And I'm reminded by something which is in the British press on the weekend. I think it's in the Daily Telegraph, but I read it on the weekend. It says that Iran is preparing to attack the United Kingdom, but they wouldn't be doing it through by sending in missiles, although that's sort of implied that it could still, they could do it, but they say they're going to send in sleeper cells of Hezbollah to attack Britain, and consequently a preemptive attack on Iran is required. So in a sense, we seem to be repeating the same kind of ritual where Iran is being presented as an enemy of the West and of Britain and the United States, and that in fact they're preparing to attack Great Britain. And in fact, this, in a sense, it reminds one of the months leading up to the invasion of Iraq.
Conveniently, the British and American mainstream press have forgotten all about David Kelly and the lead up to the last war, which included the Attorney General, no less, Lord Goldsmith, changing his legal advice twice, which, according to lawyers I've spoken to, is unheard of. And indeed, when he changed it the first time, the second most senior lawyer at the Foreign Office, Elizabeth Wilmshurst, resigned immediately. And there is a resignation letter on the web. Elizabeth Wilmshurst is her name. If you remember, Robin Cook, who had been the Foreign Secretary and was mysteriously sacked and became leader of the House of leader of the House of Commons, he resigned on the 18th of March 2003, 2 days before hostilities began. Before official hostilities began, because you know they were going on ever since 1991, secretly.
Now, this begs the question: if this is a political assassination, what are the implications? Everything points to a political assassination. I think the Evening Standard, for U.S. listeners, that's one of London's most prominent dailies. It comes out in the afternoon. They had a headline, "Was David Kelly assassinated?" So I'm asking
correct.
The question.
That was on the evening that our first letter was published in the morning on January the 27th, 2004. Tuesday, of course, it's in front of me here, and the letter was called, it was published in The Guardian, which is a major mainstream broadsheet newspaper, except it's semi-tabloid now, but it's still pretty good. That was how we broke the mainstream media silence about this, because originally offered The Guardian, five of us, two writers and three doctors who had sifted through the evidence which Hutton heard, and offered an article, a lengthy article, to The Guardian. Seamus Milne, who's the editor of the comment section of The Guardian, I spoke to him on Sunday afternoon. In fact, it must have been Sunday, January the 25th. And he said that it'd be difficult to publish it. It was very interesting, but could we turn it into a letter and have it signed only by the doctors? And we complied, obviously, There were concerns, but we did it, and I've actually got the letter here. It's quite short. I could read it out if you're least, if you think you're
listening. I think we published that letter, did we not? Which letter was it?
It's the very first one. There's a link to it on the,
That was in 2006,
on the
was
article,
it not?
Which is entitled Sector Report on the Death of David Kelly.
Yes, I've got it right in front of me, actually.
Lord Hutton's findings challenged by medical doctors.
Text of response to Lord Hutton, was it not?
Yes, that's right. And if you go down to the bottom, you'll see that the first of the links is that letter. Because, as you say, so in the morning that came out, and this was on the eve, remember, we were very green at the time, politically, and we were only concerned with the medicine, as it were. We had the letter published in the morning and the evening the same day. I don't live in London, I live in North Wales, but you can see it on the internet. There was a huge headline, was Kelly murdered? And they were quoting from our letter. And if you remember, what happened then was that instead of that being the news the next day, which is what you'd expect, it was said that the Sun managed to have someone leak to them a copy of the Hutton report, which was going to be published the next day, i.e. Hutton was going to present it and then publish it. There were certain people like the Kelly family and Blair and Hoon and others who had it had a copy 24 hours in advance. So, in other words, between our letter and the Evening Standard headline, if you like. But what the next day's headlines in the mainstream media were, there was no mention of our letter, all of the Evening Standard headline. It was all about the Sun having the Hutton report leaked to them in advance. And of course, Hutton and Blair were said to be absolutely... Okay.
I'm sorry. We'll have to go to commercial break. This is absolutely fascinating. We'll be back after the break with our guest, Stephen Frost. Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour, which comes to you from Montreal. It's an initiative of the Center for Research on Globalization. My name is Michel Chosadovsky, your host. Our website, www.globalresearch.ca. And our guest in the second hour of the program is Dr. Stephen Frost, who joins us from Wales. And we are discussing the mysterious death of weapons expert and scientist David Kelly in July 2003. The circumstances behind his death seem to point to political assassination on orders of the British government in relation to the weapons of mass destruction dossier and the so-called sexed up intelligence report. But there may be other underlying circumstances behind his death, but what seems to be very clear is that this was not a suicide as claimed in the official report. Welcome back, Stephen.
Yes, thank you. Could I say, Michel, before I forget, I think the importance of David Kelly is that I think it's highly unlikely that we're going to see Bush and Blair and all the others in court at the ICC, the International Criminal Court, you know, at the Hague. But I think because due process has been so comprehensively subverted in the investigation of David Kelly's death, as it has, and if you read the four articles that we've had published on your site, it's much clearer, I think, to your listeners. Then I think this probably represents the best possibility, short of impeachment proceedings in America, of course, the British people responsible, in a court of law, giving evidence under oath. They gave evidence to Lord Hutton, but of course they weren't giving it under oath, so they weren't afraid of perjury or anything like that. And so that is the importance of it. And they're absolutely scared to death of the Kelly affair, which is so even more than 9/11 and 7/7, Kelly is the one thing that no one wants to discuss. Are you with me?
But, of course, if you like,
it's the silver bullet as opposed to the smoking gun.
It's a silver bullet directed against whom?
Well, it could be. Yes, against, obviously, Blair et al. The people for taking my country to war illegally.
But taking your country, it's also my country because I was actually born in Wales, to war on a fabricated pretext and killing an individual who has the courage to possibly reveal the truth.
And in addition to that, I think the importance of Kelly's death, as opposed to, as you mentioned to me when we spoke on Saturday, that certain people had died in suspicious circumstances in America. I think the importance of Kelly.
Absolutely.
He was one of them.
We're at the end of the program, Stephen. This has been a fabulous discussion. Our guest, Stephen Frost, the mysterious circumstances surrounding the death of David Kelly.
Thank you very much, Michelle.